when you open the atomic age, the nuclear age, you do damage in all dimensions. When you do things like that, and you split the atom and you do that, it catches the attention of dimensional phenomena. In other words, whatever's out there, and I'm not going to put names on it because I don't know and we don't know, whatever's out there, you're getting their attention because it does damage.
Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture with Isaac Weisop. Today we are joined by a very special guest, a world-famous UFO investigative journalist, Paola Harris. She's worked with every big figure in the history of UFOs. She's released a book with Jacques Vallée called Trinity, the Best Kept Secret. And she is going to join us today to discuss the details of arguably the most important UFO crash of all time. We're talking 1945. We're talking the predecessor to Roswell. We're talking about the Trinity site where they, quote unquote, tested the first atomic bomb. You're going to hear why I put tested in quotes. And we're going to discuss the event, the witnesses, the artifacts that they still have. They have pieces of the craft. They had witnesses that saw the aliens. We're going to find the real history of this whole event. And it's going to blow your mind. I'm very excited for you. We're going to talk about these visitations from aliens, atomic explosions, potentially opening portals. I talk a little bit about Jack Parsons. I try to squeeze that in there a little bit in the history of the occult obsession with Palomar Mountain. We'll talk black monoliths at the Trinity site. James Selby Downard comes up, Oppenheimer, George Adamski, Colonel Corso from Roswell, and all of this is about upsetting reality in Paola's words. So without further ado, I'm very excited for you to hear this, so we're just going to get right into it. Also, you can get her book, Trinity, the Best Kept Secret, on Amazon. You can check out Paola Harris at the Laughlin Conference, November 11th through the 13th. Go to starworksusa.com. You can go to her website to get signed paperbacks, paolaharris.com, paolaharris.com. I'll have links in the show notes for all that stuff. I'll hit you at the end of the show for an outro. Let's go. All right, we're live. Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop, and today we're joined by an investigative journalist. She's one of the biggest names in this field of UFO research. She's worked with all the major players in UFO history. We're talking J. Allen Hynek from Project Blue Book. We're talking Jacques Vallée. We're talking Colonel Philip Corso. We're talking the Canadian former Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer, as well as countless witnesses she's interviewed on the unexplained UFO slash phenomenon, publishing many books along the way. She's been featured on Coast to Coast. She's written the seminal book, Conversations with Colonel Corso, where she published interviews with this most famous UFO whistleblower of Roswell. And today she's here with us to discuss a very interesting incident that most people don't even know about. It's the UFO crash of 1945, detailed in her book with Dr. Jacques Vallée, Trinity, the Best Kept Secret. Welcome to the show, Ms. Paola Harris.
Oh, thank you so much. That was a long introduction. I don't think I did a lot of things, but I'm getting very old. I'm now 77 years old, and I am donating all of my work to Rice University. I have to tell people that, because behind me you see all those on the other side, all those drawers. They were filled with all the work I've been doing for 40 years, and it's not just here; it was all over the world. Because I have to tell you, Isaac, I lived in Italy from 1992 to 2007 when I came back to the United States, and I was teaching at the American Overseas School of Rome and ancient history in English. So I have a master's in education. So everything that comes out of my mouth is going to be like a teacher.
This is great. This is exactly, you're the perfect guest. I'm so excited to have you on here because I actually have a ton of stuff, a ton of questions. I feel like we could do this for hours, but I know our time is limited. I thought maybe we could maybe just dive right into it, right? Let's talk about this book, Trinity, the Best Kept Secret, because I actually bought this when it came out because I am fascinated by the oddities of the southwestern desert of America. I feel like there's something going on there, particularly in New Mexico, as it relates to the phenomenon. So when I saw there was this book about Trinity, I was like, okay, let's go. And I've read the book, but I think obviously it would be best if you told the story of this best kept secret. So for the listeners that have no idea, which I'm going to guess a lot of people don't, because people think Roswell 1947 is the big first crash. Let's get into it. Paola, what's the story of Trinity, the best kept secret?
The cover of the new one. This is the one that I found. The fourth witness is called New Updated. It's got a red cover. And because you never know. I mean, I was in the middle of a conversation and there was another witness. So we didn't want to leave him out. So the story is this, that in 1945, Trinity, and I'm so glad you read. As a teacher, I give you an A+.
All right. Thank you. I'll take it.
Trinity is the name of where the atomic bomb exploded, because there's three mountains there. It's near Socorro. The crash was 13 miles away in San Antonio, New Mexico, not at San Antonio, Texas. And what happened was that the bomb exploded in July, and 1 month later, two little boys were fixing fences. There was a major thunderstorm. It's always thunderstorm, you know. I don't know if you noticed that, but even with Roswell, I've been to New Mexico so many times, and the thunderstorms are horrible. And the little boys, because they lived through the atomic bomb blast, I mean, Jose, who was nine, said his mom opened the door at 4:30 in the morning and she was blinded in one eye. And Jose himself, his eardrum was blown out. Now, they never told the people within the 150-mile radius that they were exploding the bomb. So look at that. And it's not a test. Jacques writes a gorgeous book here, because he writes it as a romance, and he says it is not a test. Not a romance, a novel. He writes it as a novel. He said this was not a test. He said Japan had already surrendered, and they wanted to see what the effect of the atomic bomb was going to be. But they didn't tell him. So 150-mile radius, everybody is affected. Remy's bed went from one side to the other of the bedroom. So these little boys are just doing what they do. And during World War II, they're driving a truck, they're riding horses, they're fixing fences, and they hear another thud. They think it's bomb again. And they watch. This is why it's so amazing. A avocado-shaped craft take out a piece of a radio tower, a very tall, they call it the Italian Tower, which is another name for Marconi Tower. And they see this craft do a kind of a controlled landing, an L-shaped landing, stop. And of course, they're going to go down with their binoculars and their horses and see. They don't know it's a UFO. Remember this, because there is no Kenneth Arnold yet. There is no Roswell yet. There's nothing in the papers. And even the young boys who were part of the Manhattan Project, who took 7 days to clean this up, they didn't know what it was. So because, first of all, it's avocado shaped, it has a little dome on top, and there is nothing in the current media or anything that will talk about UFOs. So the little boys go up there, they look and they see a panel have been blown off, and there they see these, and Jose describes it perfectly, these three beings sashaying or floating back and forth, and they're making high pitched sounds like, he described it like when you go to kill a rabbit, the last dying sounds are a baby crying. And he wanted to go in there and help them. And he thought they were kids. I mean, you know, they're the same height. And what did they look like? You have to read the book for the details. But they had big heads. They had almond-shaped eyes. And they had long, spindly arms. And so what's interesting, and you said you want to talk about this later, and I'm willing to talk about the paranormal part, is that Remy, the 7-year-old, got a vision when he's looking through the binoculars at these people or these things or these artificial intelligence clones or whatever they are. He got a vision of people falling out of skyscrapers, and he had never seen a skyscraper. Okay, so he got that vision, and they stayed there for at least half an hour looking at them. And then because there was so much smoke and on all the mesquite and everything, and Remy started to cry, Jose and Remy went back to the father, the Padilla Ranch, that was the Padilla Ranch. They told the father and Sheriff Apodaca, who went the next day to the inside the craft. They found it was covered by brush. So I got the story this way, and then you can ask me some questions. I was in Italy. I read about it. I wondered why my colleagues never followed up when the people are still alive. You know, with Roswell, they're all dead. I mean, you can't find people that are alive when you wait 60 years. And I didn't realize that it was destined for me and Jacques to do it, but me mainly, because I was working on it 5 years before Jacques came along. And so what happened was that the son of the pilot that overflew this and saw the two little Indian boys on horses called me. And when I found out that it was that story, he called me in the United States. I got their telephone numbers and began working on it.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, and that the whole story is monumental from what I understand in the book. You know, the first time we tested an atomic bomb, and then within weeks, we have this major crash and sighting with witnesses still alive. And the boys, you said in the book, if I recall, or I don't remember, was it during you were interviewing Remy, I think, and Remy was talking about the visions of the skyscraper and all that, but then talked about, I think the implication was that Remy was having nightmares and didn't
Jose
want...
was having nightmares, yeah.
Oh, it was Jose, okay.
Yeah, because, you can't have an impact or contact with anything without it completely upsetting your whole entire, you know, nervous system and your reality. And this is why I say, you know, sometimes I believe that some of the people that don't want to know about it don't want to, to upset their reality. It does upset your reality, and I upset mine naturally. You know, when I began working with Hynek in 1980, I was okay with sightings. I mean, I was putting pins in maps. I was not okay with looking at what was inside, because that changes my whole reality. Then I have to change my mind. Then I have to change the way I think. And I don't think most people want to do that. You know, when you say, do you believe in UFOs? It's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of data collecting. And then you need to change the way, like John Mack used to tell me, you need to change your worldview to accommodate it. And you know, a lot of people don't want us. So that's fine. You know, what I want to stress, though, is people say, well, you know, these are kids. Well, the kids is separated for 60 years. They didn't see each other. One lived in Roland Heights. Jose lived in Roland Heights, California. He became a state trooper. And the other one, Gig Harbor, Washington, he worked as an insurance man, and he worked for the governor of Washington, Dixie Lee. And she was the head of the Atomic Energy Commission. Because he was Hispanic and got her elected, we realized when he told us that that she let him see the file. This is the first crash, so it's in the file of the Atomic Energy Commission files, which is more top secret than any file anywhere. The president doesn't even have access to it, because naturally it would go there. There was no Air Force. It was Army Air Force together. So where is this file going to go? And of course they're intelligent. They know they're going to know it's the reaction to something they did. And then people say to me, well, why did they wait 60 years? Well, this is a case where two little boys, we have the exact location. We have four witnesses now. And we have the fact that on the seventh day that they were doing the cleanup, the 9-year-old, who is very mischievous, waits until everybody goes to the Owl Barn Cafe. And that's where Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project had cabins behind that. It was the only watering hole. They wait until everybody's gone. And they and Jose goes in, and off of a plaque against the wall, he pulls off a bracket that's about this big. And that bracket was given to me for 2 years. I put it in a bank vault. So we have a piece of inside a UFO. We have the location and we have the witnesses. And I don't think there's any other case like that. And it's hard because if people believe that it's all Roswell, and we were hoping to have a real great conversation because there's a lot of there's a lot of congruity with Roswell. Sabrina, who was a seven-year-old, played with long pieces of aluminum foil when she was a kid that used to bunch up and go back, and because they had no toys. And it was the father, you know, of Jose Faustino that went back there on the horse and found all that stuff. And this will even make you laugh, but I'm trying to make this short. Because when the craft hit the radio tower, it spewed out 10 pounds of what we call angel hair. And I'm not going to, I don't know if it's fiber optics, but it was all lit up. It was purple, pink, and white. And they didn't have electricity in those days. So they put it in a bag. They took it home and they decorated the Christmas tree with it and all the windows. And they gave this angel hair stuff to the whole neighborhood. So, I mean, my fourth witness is about the angel hair stuff. My fourth witness, that I found, Faustino Myers, he was 15 years old. He didn't know, when Jack questioned him, he didn't know he wrote a book. He didn't know there was a crash. He didn't know anything. He just knew that he decorated the Christmas tree with this stuff and that he used to put it in people's backs because it would irritate their backs. There's no electricity in these days. So you can you imagine how you would play with that stuff? And this came out of the crash. So it would be nice if all the researchers got together and could discuss and put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah, absolutely. This and that's one of the fascinating parts of this story is the artifacts. You talk about the angel hair, right? And I recall in the book, one of the cousins, I think, had played with it and said it had spikes, which I found curious because I've spoken with Ryan Bledsoe. He's Chris Bledsoe's son. From a famous contact experience in North Carolina. And I think it was they saw some kind of orb, or his father did, and it was a sort of thing with spikes. And it made me think of that. I don't know. I think the shapes were entirely different.
Used to pinch her hands. She called it pinch her hands. Spike. And then when we got hold of Faustino, and he didn't even know about the crash, he didn't even know what it was. He said that the reason why he used to, you know, a kid around at 15 years old put it people's backs, and that's in the new book, is because it used to irritate them like little spikes. It maybe it was electric, you know, what do you call it? Electric, you know,
ESD, static discharge or something.
Yeah, static discharge or something. But we have two witnesses who say that when they touched it, it would spike their, it would be like pinch their hands. I mean, they still trimmed the tree with it because it was all lit. It was very pretty.
Now, was this the same thing, the memory metal that you're talking about? Was it the same thing as the angel hair that
memory metal was like long strips of aluminum foil that when you bunched it together, it would go back to the, it was like very much the metal described in the Roswell incident, you know, the memory metal. I brought Jesse Marcel Jr. to Italy because I brought a lot of the original witnesses, Colonel Corso, Jesse Marcel Jr., and he described something like that too. So that came out of that. And then, of course, the bracket, what we call the famous bracket that came off the wall. And what happened to the bracket is that I gave it to Jacques to analyze in Silicon Valley. And the thing is that the bracket will eventually go to Rice University because that's where it belongs. All this stuff belongs to the people. This is a history of planet Earth. It is not a UFO book. Mm-hmm. I mean, this really did happen. If Dixie Lee is showing Remy the case, whatever crashed there, I mean, whoever that was, or if it was artificial intelligence or whatever it was, wanted somebody to cover it. Otherwise, it would have been a waste. Mm. You understand? If 60 years later, we hadn't come on the scene, nobody would ever known about it. And, you know, these guys, if you took something from the gut, you're not going to talk about it. So Jose had hidden it, and he was not going to come out and say, yeah, I went in there and I took this, because that's the reason they kept quiet for so long.
I found it interesting. They called it the tesoro, which means treasure, I think.
Yeah, in Spanish. It was a souvenir. It was a treasure.
And the one, I don't remember if it was Jose or Remy, was talking about how they had it in their possession. And I want to say they said three aliens visited them. Does that ring a bell?
I'm so glad you brought that up. We were going to talk about the paranormal after, but there's so many things. I mean, Remy lived one place. He lived about 5 miles down from Jose, in closer to San Antonio in the El Bar. And his father, Mr. Baca, had a sheep herder who had a sheep herder shack there. And, you know, in the sheep herder shack was the place the boys hid it the first time, under the floorboards of the sheep herder shack, because they didn't know where to, then they hid it somewhere else later. Well, a poor sheep herder walks into Mr. Baca's place and says, I have to move away. And Mr. Baca said, what's wrong? And he says, three homozitos, or three little men, came in through the wall and asked for the tesoro. Well, that was a paranormal occurrence. He didn't know the boys had done that. It could have been a dream. It could have been a vision. It could have been anything. But the fact that he was terrified because these three little men, they don't know. Remember, there's no magazines, there's no books, there's no, you know, alien statues. There's nothing in the modern 1945 world that even looks like this. So they didn't know, so they called them three little men. And that is the paranormal part. That is, you know, we couldn't leave that out of the book, because that happened. And then Jose hid it somewhere else. They took it away and hid it somewhere else until years later. I must tell you, because I think he's the greatest researcher ever, Timothy Good heard about this case. I mean, this case is not something I dug up. Timothy Good heard about it. He flew to Gig Harbor, Washington. He questioned Remy Baca when he was alive. Remy Baca died in 2013 of diabetes. Thank God I got there too. Jaime Maussan got there too. James Fox got there too. We all talked to Remy Baca before he died. It's just that we didn't go to the crash site until after he died. And so not only did Timothy Good go there, and it's in his book, I think it's called, I've got to look it up, Earth and Alien Enterprise, but Ryan Wood's book, which I think everybody should have in their library, it's called Magic Eyes Only, has 93 crashes, way before 1945. But he has 1945 in there. And so he has got it in there. So I knew, and Ryan talked to Remy and Jose too. So it isn't that this came out of the blue. It's that, I don't know how to tell you this, Isaac, but when you go down to New Mexico, like I was doing the first 5 years, three times a year, it was a tremendous amount of money. It's a flight, it's a hotel, it's everything. And people don't do field research because it's a tremendous amount of money. And I had to keep going down. And then Jacques found out about the metal, and that's what interested him the most 4 years ago. And then he began going down three times a year. He loves New Mexico anyway. He gets in a car and he drives the New Mexico desert and loves it. But
that's fascinating, yeah. I think in the book, I think it was Jacques' part where he was suggesting that maybe these UFO crashes aren't, you know, aliens that don't know how to steer a craft, but maybe it's designed to crash and provide a gift, right, like this tesoro object, which I found that to be very fascinating. It's an interesting take on it, because I've always thought that, as I've been critical of the whole UFO agenda stuff sometimes. I go back and forth, but I often think that too. I think, man, if these things are intelligent enough to make it here, why would they crash? But that's an interesting idea.
Well, I buy into that too. It is a gift, and you got to look at the time period. It's 1945 to, like, there's Aztec Corona and other crashes. You know, it is a statement, and you're not going to have a statement unless you have something happening around. And not the fact that there's thunderstorms and all this and all that. That's one thing, but it's a statement. It in the case of 1945, if we hadn't done this, it would have been wasted. Nobody would have known. So they knew. Isn't it weird? Because I thought, I don't know who they met, Remy and Jose, but whoever they met knew Jacques and I were coming in 60 years.
Yeah, right, right.
Isn't that weird? That yeah. passed that by your mind. They knew that even though 60 years would go by, that we would cover the story. Otherwise, it would be wasted for them to crash.
Well, the whole, so like that whole region, right? So I research a lot of stuff, and particularly the occult, synchromysticism and stuff. And James Selby Downard, he's kind of the godfather of symbolism and synchromysticism. He went to great lengths to discuss the Trinity site and the journey of death, the Ornato del Muerte pathway to Trinity. And he suggests that, and this is me paraphrasing, that there's some kind of hidden or occult destiny in all of this, and perhaps the evolution of man. And in the book, during one of your interviews, you talked about how you had visited all these sites, and you felt, and I'm again paraphrasing, you felt a certain like vibe of some sorts, particularly Oppenheimer's Destroyer of Worlds quote. What do you think Oppenheimer's saying? What do you think about that area? Do you think Oppenheimer's saying there's more than one world? What's your take on that?
No, I think World War II was tricky. First of all, that was not a test. I mean, if you read Jacques read three books on just Japan to find out that the emperor had already surrendered. So we threw the bomb anyway. It was not a test because it was exploded from the ground up, which did more damage. If you just exploded from the airplane up in the air, it does less damage. It kills fewer people. Now, that's number one. Number two, when you open the atomic age, the nuclear age, you do damage in all dimensions. In other words, an atomic explosion, and this is just atomic, because in the 70s, we did so many tests in the Atlantic, and the French and I think Indian did it in the Bikini Atoll, of H-bomb, which is much, much, much more powerful than A-bomb, the atomic bomb tests. And when you do things like that, and split the atom and you do that, it catches the attention of dimensional phenomena. In other words, whatever's out there, and I'm not going to put names on it because I don't know and we don't know, whatever's out there, is you're getting their attention because it does damage. It any kind of atomic bomb is going to do damage. I mean, it opened up the atomic nuclear age, and even Jacques talks about this because this book is relevant just because of the nuclear threats with what's happening today in Ukraine and Russia and everywhere else. We are playing a chess game because everybody has it now. And the only way that you will come out of this alive is if you do a checkmate, which means I have it, you have it, checkmate. So nobody's gonna, release it, because we know it's like the Cold War. We had all of those missiles pointing towards Russia, and they had them pointing towards us. And in 69, the missiles shut down at Malmstrom Air Force Base, one right after another. The beings, whoever they are, whatever, are just making a statement. We can shut you down. What are you thinking? And then in Russia, they activate the codes, and they're scared to death because they can't stop it. What are you people thinking? And, you can't uninvent this. And so Oppenheimer, and when you go to Trinity site, and I suggest that people, it's open twice a year. You can go see where the atomic bomb was exploded. There's a black onyx monolith there. And it's I couldn't breathe when I went there. I've been there twice, and Jacques has been there. And what Oppenheimer realized they did was start this pattern. And when you go there, there's a plaque that says, "I am Death, the destroyer of worlds, plural worlds," means not just this world, other worlds, you know. And it comes from the Bhagavad Gita. Now, why would Oppenheimer pick that to put on a plaque? And then he lost his security clearance, became a peacenik. If you study the life of Robert Oppenheimer, I think a lot of these people had regrets, because you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And that is the date. And that's why this book is history. It's not a UFO book. It's the history of planet Earth.
Now, this is fascinating, because there's actually, Christopher Nolan's making a movie about Oppenheimer that releases next year. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for that.
No, but I'm very interested in him. I had his granddaughter in my class by accident or design in Rome. And,
really?
Yeah, and so everything that's happened to me has been a coincidence. But she was in my class in the private school, and I thought, oh my God, you know, I got to look into this.
What are the odds? That's fascinating.
Well, yeah, don't even go into my life. I mean, I started my career here, and I met Bridie Murphy. Her niece was in my class. So I'm going, okay, well, why do I have to look into reincarnation?
There's something to it, right? And Paolo, you know, because I study the occult and symbolism and all this stuff, I'm starting to believe more and more in synchromysticism. That the fact that they, Oppenheimer and all these A-bomb people, would meet at the Owl Bar, because the owl is symbolic of wisdom, the goddess Minerva. Some people say the Gnostic Sophia. Then,
well, that was the only watering hole, though. There was nothing else. That's the only grocery store. It was the only soda fountain. But it did have a mystical name.
Yes. Yeah, it did, huh? And that whole... So, I don't know if you... Have you researched much on Jack Parsons?
It, well, no, because that goes back into NASA. And this is too much.
Okay.
Much overload.
So Jack Parsons, he was an occultist, and obviously the guy who set up JPL, the predecessor to NASA.
Yeah.
And he did some rituals out in the desert in 1946, and you know, this was around the same time as all these events,
right?
People claim that Jack Parsons doing these magic rituals, he was trying to incarnate a spirit into a what he called the Scarlet Whore of Babylon. Long story. But anyway, he was doing all these rituals of magic and opening up portals. And the story goes that allegedly he was kind of a buffoon, and Aleister Crowley warned that, hey, he's doing these magic rituals. He's not doing them right. He's not going to close off these gateways. Then a year later, we get Roswell. But when I for a long time, that's been in the back of my mind, where I think, okay, that could have been what happened. But now that I've read this book, Trinity, the suggestion being made here is that maybe it's actually the atomic bomb that in a way could have perhaps opened up portals and stuff.
And Roswell, look, everything around that area, Roswell's three hours away, was where the 409 bomb squadron was housed. So, you know, where the Enola Gay and all those. So it isn't like they picked a city out of the, you know, they were watching that area. Whoever they is, and don't ask me, was watching that area. Because if you could do a timeline of history, Isaac, this is the only way I study it anymore. Study the timeline of history when major events happen on the planet, and then you'll see exactly what was around there, like the 1969 Maelstrom Air Force Base. I mean, now there's UFOs around Ukraine. Whatever is watching this planet, whatever, is making a subtle statement to get our attention. Like Jacques says, it's to get our attention. I say it's to raise our consciousness, because I think we're at SOS mode right now. I think we're in emergency mode. I mean, we have done so many stupid things that I can't even name them when I'm looking at this, the whole entire thing. I mean, Los Alamos was first, if we did a lot of research, it was a boys' camp. It was a, you know, camping or, you know, a private school. So why are you picking New Mexico as having all of these qualities? And then you can go do your research on portals and what's there and the electromagnetic grid and all that kind of stuff. You can do your research. In fact, you know, my big complaint as a teacher is this should be a university class. And why aren't people getting together in all areas? In psychology, geology, you know, a world history. Why aren't we just studying this? And then they'd all come and they put the pieces of the puzzle together, because this isn't just a crash because they decided that's where, you know, they're not on vacation. This is a statement. Nothing that's happened is by chance. It is a statement. And then you have to go look at the geopolitical. And I don't think most researchers even bother with geopolitical. And as far as portals and stuff like that, that's ancient. I mean, that's been going on since the beginning of time.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask, because you mentioned in the book, it's mentioned you were studying George Adamski, that famous UFO contactee from Mount Palomar. And that's, again, that Mount Palomar region is this place where all this paranormal activities happen, ritual magic, the occult. It was said that there was there's a magical order called the Ordo Templi Orientis that Parsons was a member of, and he ran a certain lodge. But anyway, Michael Hoffman's book, he talks about how the OTO actually had a lodge at the base of Mount Palomar before the observatory was there, because they claimed it was they call it the sexual chakra of the earth. Did you come across any of that kind of occult research?
Yes, it's all connected. If you keep compartmentalizing the study, you'll never get to the truth. It is absolutely all connected. And I had to look at, and I don't want to go into it. You can interview me another time on this, but I have graduated to look at the Space Brother movement of Giant Rock. Okay. And I went back to Howard Menger's place in June, which is still there, where Val Thor was sitting, and looked at the whole entire situation there, because he was part of the Giant Rock people. Because I believe that whoever was visiting then thought, because of Yogananda and the start of the New Age movement on the West Coast, they could intervene. And whatever was visiting, a whole Space Brother stuff, came up because of a geopolitical, historical situation with Yogananda, Maharishi, and all of that. And what's Howard Hughes doing funding the Integratron? So, you know, I'm going, okay, well, why don't people study that? Who was involved in that? Because those guys, and we forgot all about that. Now it's just, you know, aliens abducting people left, right. And we forgot that right after the atomic bomb, the messages that came to both Adamski and to Eugenio Siracusa on the island of Italy. Of course, I'm an international journalist. Eugenio had the same messages with the same people, with the same suits. I questioned all the people around Eugenio in Sicily. Stop the nuclear. You guys are going to destroy yourselves. So what are they coming to just hang out and, you know, and they're not only coming to Adamski, they're coming to Eugenio Siracusa. And if you look at all of the world contacts, I now only do work in Latin America, because they stopped going to Southern California. They ended up in the desert, Chilca Desert in Peru with Sisto Paz and all that group, who see spacemen walking off the ships in 1970s. So you got to follow the timeline, the geopolitical situation. Why would they ever come back to Southern California anyway? I mean, it's different agendas, different races, different events, according to a geopolitical timeline. And if people did that, they would be able to piece this together.
Do you think that's possible that some of the, I don't know, major power figures geopolitically already think and know this kind of thing, and perhaps they're conducting some kind of ritual theater to try to stoke or to try to influence visitation for whatever reason it may be. Do you think it's possible that we're actually witnessing some kind of as above, so below ritualistic play out where, for instance, with Russia talking about nuclear weapons and stuff, I mean, do you think that there's key players involved that are high up geopolitically that think on this level? Or do you think this is strictly a UFO researcher kind of attitude?
No. If you study, but you have to study the beginning of time. Even the Romans had CBS, which are psychics, and the Greeks. And you have to study, and I taught ancient history. This is why I say, wow, I'd do anything to get a university involved in this. Because you'd piece this together in 1 minute, and it wouldn't be ufology, it wouldn't be all kinds of stuff. There has been from the beginning of time the secret knowledge that you're talking about in this power structure. The problem with it today in today's UFO circuit is it becomes sensationalistic, and that's all people pay attention to. They don't pay attention to the actual data. They love all the occult stuff and all that stuff, but you have to go way back to ancient aliens. You have to go way back to the Aztecs and the Mayans. You have to go way back to look at, that's a pattern. That's a sub pattern. Does it work? Absolutely. But I don't believe that everybody in the United States government is doing stuff like that. I don't believe that they even have time to even look at this. I think that, this is only my belief that Eisenhower knew a lot. And that he basically was right when he said that the secret is the military-industrial complex. And here's my book on Colonel Corso, Conversations with Colonel Corso, where he talked about what they did only for the Army. You know, that back engineering, the day after, he never was at Roswell anyway, and they had a lawsuit against the book, so he could never talk here in the United States. So I brought him to Italy twice. And he told me a lot of things. He also told me he was friends with Gene Dixon. Gene Dixon was the only one that predicted Kennedy's death.
Oh, interesting.
So, then you want to say, the where did that come from? You know, it's all interconnected. And I'm going to say one more thing. When I met him by accident, because when they sent me from my office in Italy to do the 50th anniversary, by the way, 50th anniversary of Roswell, the only people who went to Clifford Stone's house was me, foreign journalist, and Vittorio Puccaccini, who had just done the Virginia Brazil case. And we were the only two foreign journalists that went to Clifford Stone's house. All the rest were like partying hardy and, you know, had their fans and everything. And what Clifford Stone had on his coffee table was 8 minutes of the Holloman landing, which I didn't know because I didn't know anything about it. And so, and the reason why I mentioned Vittorio Puccaccini is because of the Virginia case that just came out in James Fox's movie. It's very important that people start connecting dots here.
Is that the new James Fox movie that just came out?
Contact, amazing.
But okay. I haven't seen it yet.
You need to see it. Everybody needs to see it. But I had come in with Puccaccini from Brazil, so. And Colonel Corso, I had no place to sleep. So I because it was a big party. I mean, Willie Strieber was there, wow. Linda, John Mack, everybody was there. Wow. So when I went to the media place, they told me to look in the phone book, and the only room that was open was the room next to Colonel Corso. And that's how I got the interview with Colonel Corso and became so close to him. And the interview he gave me was a meeting with a being, and it's not it wasn't a little gray because it had a helmet, at White Sands when he saw the craft there appearing and disappearing. And he told me that when he went up to the being, he pulled out his gun. He told Jack the same story. So, and he said, friend or foe, and the being said, neither. I need to leave. You need to shut down your radars. So it means that. And Colonel Corso told me that they were told to shut down their radars. certain times of day, it interfered with whatever is flying around watching. So whatever was watching White Sands and Colonel Corso was the head of a missile battalion. But I'm going to tell you, Isaac, when he gave me that story, I don't want to print it because I thought people would be think he was crazy. And I just, you know, as a journalist, I said, I don't even want to hear this because, and the being, and when Colonel Corso said to the being, and because the being said, you want to come in and see the craft? He said, what do you have to offer me? And the being said, a new world if you could take it.
Wow.
And the okay. new world if you can take it. So Colonel Corso then writes it on a napkin, and I don't want the story. I don't want it because it's going to make him look awful. I want the back engineering stuff. I want to know what he had. I want to know that. Colonel Corso reminded me, and he, in the book, that there will be a new world if we can handle it, and that we all will be in the forefront of this new world. So I have to say this. These are taped interviews from Colonel Corso, because I basically had the tape recorder in my pocket. I'd ride with him in the car, and I just had the tape recorder on all the time. But this is not, this field, if you study it, is number one, geopolitical. Number two, paranormal. Don't throw out that part. You have to understand we live in a dimensional world. And then it's definitely has a purpose. And that's why I recommend Trinity as a historical book to people.
Well, this is fascinating. I can literally talk to you all day about this, but you do have to go. Man,
well, I'll talk to you again sometime.
I'd love that. I would love that because I've got so many questions. But for now, where can the audience connect with you and get your books, like this, you know, new game changing book, Trinity, the Best Kept Secret?
Well, first of all, it's a historical book. It should be in a historical library, and it's on Amazon, and it's in hardback and Kindle and so forth. I'm doing the Laughlin Conference at November 11 to 14 with Ricardo Gonzalez, because as I told you, I work in South America now, and in Argentina, Colombia, Chile, and Peru. And I built a conference around messages that are coming out of there. That's November 11 to 14, and that's on www.starworksusa.com. Starworks USA is my company, my media company. PaulaHarris.com is just me and all my books and so forth. I mean, I've written so many books. We haven't even gotten into all the details of what the whistleblowers have told me, especially Clifford Stone. I helped publish his book, Eyes Only. But, you know, it's let's hope that in the future we get some university classes around this, because this is what needs to be studied.
All right. There you go. I'll put the links in the show notes for all of the talking points for the books, the conference, your website. And again, thank you so much for your time. You're a tremendous voice in this arena, and I've got a lot more questions, so we'll definitely be in touch.
Okay. All right. You take care.
All right, everybody, what'd you think? That was fascinating. I could talk to Paola all day long. I'm going to try to get her back on here in the future. I feel like I said on the show, I feel like there is a strange occult connection to all of this, to the phenomenon. Then lump in the deserts of New Mexico, then throw in the atomic testing. I mean, it was the Atomic Energy Commission that had all the files on this UFO crash. I know it's got something to do with Parsons and Crowley and magic rituals, like the OTO setting up their lodge at the base of Mount Palomar before Caltech even established it as an observatory. You know, because George Adamski was out there spotting UFOs for a long time. Anyway, I'm very grateful to have Paola on the show. That was amazing. Again, get the book by Jacques Vallée and Paola Harris, Trinity, the Best Kept Secret. It's available on Amazon. You can check Paola at the Laughlin Conference, November 11th through the 13th, 2022. Go to starworksusa.com. You can get signed paperbacks from paolaharris.com. And I'll have links in the show notes for all of those things. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon. Stay woke.